Welcome back. You're watching Tip TV Finance. I'm Charlie Gibson. Now, as we all know, of course, the world of mining is a difficult and dangerous place, or certainly can be, and the number of companies that don't quite go into production according to plan is legion, and off the tip of our tongues, we could probably all name half a dozen where things, for whatever reason, be they financial, be they geological, be they metallurgical or engineering, or for whatever reason, things have not gone according to plan. Now, one of the very, very conspicuous exceptions to that rule is my next guest. This is a company that has gone to a part of the world where, well, it's well known as a mining jurisdiction, certainly, but it's not a place that every company would go to. And they've gone there, they've delineated their resource, they've done all the technical work, they've done the feasibility studies, they've raised the money, they've gone into production, they're making a profit. And not only that, but they're paying a dividend as well. So this is one of the conspicuous exceptions. Can I call it an exception? I think probably in numerical terms, certainly I can call it an exception. But so without further ado, let's find out what that company is and go to our next guest, who is Nigel Robinson, who's the Chief Financial Officer of Central Asia Metals. Nigel, very good morning to you. Thank you very much indeed for joining us. So tell us, when all is said and done, how did you do it?
We listed on the stock exchange as a junior mining company 6 years ago, almost to the day, and raised $60 million to build a what's known as an SXEW copper cathode producing factory in Kazakhstan. I think the secret to our success is very much the fact that we have done everything ourselves, kept it in-house, and kept everything extremely low cost by managing the processes ourselves. And also, we don't move any of the actual ore around the actual mine area. So what we effectively do is we have a process known as leaching, where we use a highly diluted sulfuric acid, which we leach onto waste rock effectively, and through that get very small elements of copper into solution, then put them through a plant which effectively transforms that into pure copper cathode, 99.998% pure copper cathode, and then ship it off to Turkish wire manufacturers. Sounds simple. A lot of effort goes into it, but it's quite a low-cost operation, and we're producing copper at well into the lowest quartile of the world's copper cash cost curve.
So is it the fact that you're in that sense, you're not a traditional miner, are you?
You're not
mining a primary deposit. It's a retreatment operation, effectively.
Absolutely. Yeah.
So is that the key to it? You said one of the keys is that you're not moving ore around.
Mm-hmm.
So is it the fact that, or so that takes out, I suppose, to some extent, geological risk, and I suppose it takes out what you might loosely describe as engineering risk.
Mm-hmm. Yeah,
it means you have to be very good metallurgists, so.
I think we do, and there's a lot of chemistry involved. And as you say quite rightly, we aren't traditional miners; we are people who process solutions. And as you say, that is a low-cost operation. In terms of taking out the risk that was involved from day one when we first started off, we've gone through a lot of. Through a lot of due diligence, effectively, to make sure that we've managed those risks, both from the, as you say, the metallurgical viewpoint, the leaching viewpoint, the environmental viewpoint, and obviously the technical viewpoint. And so, having raised the money, we've now well over 50,000 tons of cathode copper that we've produced through these low-cost operations.
How did you identify that asset? But was there a team of you beforehand and you were looking around the world thinking, which asset should we go for? Or did you look at the asset, say, that's the one I want, and then build a team around it?
There's an element of serendipity, I have to say, in many ways. Go back almost 10 years.
You're allowed to ride your luck if you...
incorporated. We had a basket of assets in the Central Asian region, hence the name Central Asia Metals, which was a limited company at the time. And all the fundraising initially was private money. And we had three projects in Mongolia.
Was it friends and family or was it?
It was private investors of wealthy people in London. So we effectively called it friends and family, you're right, until we honed
in. But actually it was a bit broader than that.
It's a bit broader than that, yes. And as I say, we had three projects in Mongolia, three in Kazakhstan, all different stages of development and exploration, and none of them in production. It was the boom years
of mining.
Were
they all retreatment?
No.
No, they weren't.
Some of them might have been more traditional mining, some of them very early exploration stage. As I say, some a bit closer to what you might potentially consider as investing for development into production. But then in 2008, as we all know, there was a bit of a crisis in the world financial markets. And as a consequence, we had very little money left in the bank and we had to really focus our mind. And as a company, we were down to, you know, the last probably $1 million in the bank. And we appointed a new CEO, a chap called Nick Clark, well respected in the industry, who then took on a technical engineer, also well respected in the industry. And we focused on one of our assets, which was Kunrad, and managed to make a success of it, having raised $60 million at IPO about 6 years ago. And took it through to production. All the other assets we've actually disposed of. And
did you, out of curiosity, sell them for cash, or did you just let the licenses lapse?
We allowed the licenses to lapse or dispose of them at nominal value, if I'm honest with you, Charles. Yeah, it was.
And so, how did you identify Kunrad? That Kunrad was the one. What was the process you went through?
The process really was one of, can we make this work, and can we actually develop copper at low cost? You know, will this be something we could invest in? And when we came to actually raising money at IPO, it wasn't, you know, let's build a 50,000-ton plant or 20,000-ton plant. It was almost, how much do you think we could practically raise that the investors would give us based on the assets we had, and what can we get for our money, effectively? So we estimated at that time we could possibly raise $50 million, seemed achievable.
So you cut your cloth according to your
budget. Absolutely,
as opposed to doing it the other way around.
Which is why we started off the project with a 10,000-ton per annum cathode copper plant. We have subsequently increased the output of that plant to 15,000 tonnes as a plant, and our ongoing production from this year will be around the 13,000 to 14,000 tonne mark.
So do you look back on that and think how short-sighted the city was for not giving you all the finance up front, or do you think actually no, that was the right way of doing it?
We would argue that was the right way of doing it, because there was obviously risk at the time, there was technical risk, which through a process of managing that risk, we've managed to mitigate over the period of time. So I think it was the right way to do it, actually. Start to learn to walk effectively and then run later on as you get a bit more confident in the processes and everything that you're doing.
So fantastic success, as we've discussed, in that sense. How reproducible is it? Can you go around the world, or can you go around Kazakhstan and say that there are similar assets here, go and buy those, put them into production in a similar way?
That's a good question. It is certainly, I would say, reproducible. I don't think it's as easy as everybody thinks, that you get any dump from any mine will therefore leach and give you low-cost copper cathode. You can probably get the cathode copper, but there may be other circumstances which make it more expensive. You may have to put it on a pad. What we do is in situ leaching. We don't actually transport the waste rock effectively onto a pad, is the first point. And I suppose the other point.
So you leave it where it is, it's already on its pad.
And do it in situ, therefore you do save quite a lot on costs. And this is not our own proven technology. That's the other point I must add. This is technology that's well known in the industry. Probably about 25 to 30% of the world's copper, comes from copper cathode that's produced out of what's known as an SXEW process, solvent extraction, electrowinning. The other 70% will be through.
But not that much is in situ leaching, is it?
No, it's not. No, there needs to be certain characteristics of where the dumps are in terms of the base level of rock, the mineralogy, the slope. Certain characteristics. So, in many ways, we have been fairly fortuitous in that sense. And so we do look for other opportunities where that might be the case, or there may be other ways you can mitigate that. But effectively, we have managed Kunrad successfully, I think, to get low-cost copper, which enables us to pay our dividends.
So where does the company go from here? Are you looking around Kazakhstan for more similar assets? Are you looking further afield?
We're looking primarily in Kazakhstan, I would say, in South American area. We've looked in Africa as well for other dumps. But we're not confining ourselves to purely being waste retreatment, as you called it before. We will, with the skills in the business, go to open pit mining, possibly even underground mining, if we were to acquire another business. So,
would you stick at SXEW, or are you prepared to look at other?
I think we've got an expertise in SXEW now, I think that's fair to say, but we would look at other methods of mining and producing copper. But the key focus the management team have is that in the mining game, provided we can get an asset that we can make money from, and that's the key point, provided we can, you know, produce whatever the output is at low cost and therefore generate cash flows for the shareholders, then we may well be interested. But our primary focus is copper in those regions. We've got an expertise in SXEW, but we would be more than happy to look at other opportunities throughout the world.
So what can we expect? What can we expect from you next? Have you narrowed it down yet? You're looking at three that you're bringing it down, or are you still at the point where you're looking at 20 opportunities?
We have, over the past 2 years, recruited a business development guy specifically to look at opportunities. And I have to say that exercise in itself has been a degree frustrating, because I think still people are expecting too high a value for their assets. We've looked at well over 100 opportunities, throughout the world, and maybe we become overly prudent as a management team. I don't know, maybe we need to throw a little bit of caution to the wind, but we're always going to be protective of what we've got at Kounrad in terms of its low-cost operation, and therefore we don't dilute, if you like, the overall cost of operation for the group, and also protect our dividend. We have a dividend policy with our shareholders, which effectively is we will pay back a minimum of 20% of the gross revenue from Kounrad every year to them. Now, in plain terms, if we generate revenues of $70 million from selling our copper, we will give back $14 million as a minimum to shareholders. And that is a pact we have with our shareholders. I think it's why the share price, should I say, has maintained at a good level despite a reduction in the copper price since we started production. And that is, you know, I think what sets the company out from its peers in the group.
Finally, because we're running out of time, I must ask you. You know, you've gone to a part of the world where, you know, angels might fear to tread, and certainly some would fear to tread. You know, yeah. It's regarded to some extent as the Wild East. How do you manage what you might call the political risk? How do you assess the political risk, and where has that taken you to in the rest of the world in terms of the prospects you're looking at, and where's it kept you away from?
We get asked this question quite a lot, actually, Charles, and I think, you know, most mining jurisdictions are generally in areas of the world where the political risk is slightly higher than developed parts of the world. I think that's fair to say. We're comfortable with Kazakhstan. We have people who've operated there for a long time. And one thing I would say is that our operations in Kazakhstan are populated and manned by locals, probably 99.5%. We've only got one expat who works there. And throughout the organisation in Kazakhstan, we have fairly well-connected individuals on the board. We have two Kazakh directors. So we know more or less what's going on in that region of the world. We have experience in there. We're used to operating there. And it's a fairly stable regime in many ways. I mean, the tax laws out there haven't changed significantly over the time we've been operating there. And it's a fairly benign tax regime, I would argue. And providing you follow the rules, it is fairly bureaucratic, but provided you follow the rules, you are able to deliver on projects on time and under budget, as we've done.
All right, Nigel, thank you very much indeed. Ladies and gentlemen, that was Nigel Robertson, the Chief Financial Officer of Centra Asia Metals. You can find out more about the company at, what's your website address?
CentralAsiaMetals.com.
CentralAsiaMetals.com, there we go. That's all we have time for, I'm afraid, but stay with us, we'll be back after the break. In the meantime, you have a very capital day.